Thank you very much, PJ. Thanks, everyone, for taking your time to join us today for this panel. Important topic, if there is any, right? How do you build your business case as a fraud expert to convince your higher-ups to finally give you the funds to get the nice tools that you absolutely need as a fraud expert? So a bit of an intro on myself. I've been a fraud practitioner 10 years prior to moving to the technology side. I worked a little bit at Nuance, running voice biometrics there, and now working for GeoComply, building some great anti-fraud technology. But the stars of the show today are my colleagues here. So we have Cheryl Pinto. Do you want to give maybe a quick intro?
Yeah, hi, I'm Cheryl Pinto. I've been in this space for quite some time. Started out running e-commerce fraud prevention at Travelocity, then was at Visa for about 9 years in different roles, but primarily identity and verification for digital payments, and then at Klarna, so I had, you know, ran global fraud prevention for fintech, buy now, pay later. And currently I'm at Tekion, but more in the payment space, so running embedded finance initiatives. And over to you.
Hey everybody, I'm Lenny Gussell, and I love my former Robinhood. It's always lovely to have that. So that was I ran fraud, trust, and safety as a kind of general manager, which was a very interesting experience. And prior to that, spent a bunch of time at Chase, and before that was on the vendor side, was one of the folks building the fraud platforms and solutions at Actimize. Happy to be here.
Awesome. So let's start with maybe the basics, right? It's challenging. I'm sure you've had that same problem as I had in the past. It's sometimes challenging to explain what our goals are, right? As fraud practitioners, when you're trying to explain and justify your existence internally. So how do you simplify it, you know, as you explain what your mission is and what the components are? What are the main pieces that every organization should make sure they have in their portfolio, the big components? So like before we dive into specific technology, maybe Lenny, if you want to start us on that.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to concentrate on, you know, kind of first line, if you will, for those folks in kind of banking and all the things that you need to have in place in order for your fraud detection and fraud prevention capabilities, and of course all of your operational capabilities that go along with that across all of your customer touch points. And it's huge, and it's a big job. And one of the challenges that we and I have had, and we often have as practitioners, is you may be on something called the fraud team or the fraud department. You may or may not have clarity in terms of how much first line activity does your team have? How do you work with your kind of second line operational risk partners and so on? Many of those things are often muddled, and so then building kind of the key pillars of what you need across your originations, across your login and customer servicing and payments, and being able to have all of those kinds of capabilities in terms of technology, which we're going to talk about a bit on this panel, together with all of the things that you need to run the business day to day operationally, and then of course your foundations of how do you measure, how do you monitor, how do you govern, all things having to do with the fraud lifecycle. It's a massive juggling act and a huge job within any organization.
And what are for you, Cheryl, like the core components you want to build the business cases for, like the pieces of tech you need to go get?
Yeah. So you know your fraud business really well, right? And so the things that I would kind of focus on is know your numbers. And when I say know your numbers, know your internal numbers, but also what numbers matter across the company. And so the way I kind of think of it is, think of time, cost, benefits, and I know this is not a numbers kind of comment, but user experience, and align your business case along those lines. How long will it take for you to deliver something? How much is it going to cost? The benefits, and we'll come in at a later, as we discuss in this panel, how to think of benefits, and then always bring it together with the user experience. It's really critical, especially kind of in this environment of thinking of how are you impacting the user experience. And then the other thing I like to think about is How do the goals align with the company's strategic goals? I know it sounds like a cliche, but what you want to look at as examples are, what is the company, as a company, what are you focused on for this year? Like, think of immediate kind of goals, which is the goal to enter new markets, and how, what you are you're looking to win the budget on, it ties into new markets, or whether it's growing a market, so you want to grow the business in a particular key market, whether it's like you want to build volume in the US or South America, wherever you're thinking about it. And then the third thing I think of is in that same realm is, within those goals, what is the company focused on, how they want to establish their brand. So those are just examples of how to align that with the company's overall goals to then bring it together.
I think it's a very good point, right? Understanding that we can be business partners and not just be the ones that slow down the business because we have compliance needs and regulatory needs. But to this point, so knowing your numbers, as fraud practitioners, we'll have visibility across our dashboards. We know what our false positive is. We know how much we're saving, how much is lost. In your experience, all of these numbers, which ones do you want to bring up to a C-suite? Like, what matters to executives when it comes to making a decision to invest in a fraud solution? Is there any number in your in your career that you're like, this really makes the difference? If I put it on the table, this is what's going to get the discussion started. Like, besides the fact that we want to align with their business objectives, is there something that really strikes their imagination and makes them pay attention?
Yeah, you have to read the room. What that means to me is, what is important at that point in time as you go in to get those budget approvals? And so the way I think about it is, and it all depends on how your company's set up. If your company is like in the growth phase, they'll think of the P&L in the here and now in terms of investments, right? So you want to look at it from the perspective of cost of, CAC, right? Customer acquisition cost. And I'm talking about numbers outside of your domain, the fraud. So you want to tie it into customer acquisition cost. What does that mean? So how will you impact that? What is the cost of new customer acquisition? What is the cost of returning customer acquisition? So whatever solution you're putting in place, if it's going to grow retention of existing customers, that's a lower customer acquisition cost for your company, right? And you want to kind of emphasize that. If there is a really strong strong focus on new customer acquisition, then it's like, how is the solution going to help bring in new customers? So I always try to align it with kind of where is the focus of the company, and then what will my solutions kind of lead into. And that's what I mean by like, know your numbers beyond your own. And then I think of conversion, and revenue lines, right? And so it's always like, pivot away from cost, because cost structures can be, you need to know your cost for sure, that's your ROI. But cost structures will only get you so far. And so pivot from, there are two pivots I look at as kind of, how are you going to drive conversion, also a revenue line, so that will impact revenue line. And this one I think is important, and there are many factors to kind of how to build it, but I started to look at lifetime value, so LTV. And so what does this do for the customer LTV?
All great points. And it's again, I kind of look at things in kind of four major quadrants or components for anything that would be customer facing. You're, like it or not, whatever you do is going to have an impact on the core business metrics, whether that be revenue growth, whatever it is that particular business or that particular product within a business cares about. You're always going to be looking at what is my appetite for, I would say, loss, not just risk more broadly, but what is my appetite for loss and what those numbers are. And then you're always going to need to understand what are your costs and what are your expenses in order to get all that done. And then the fourth quadrant being, how do I actually manage for operational risk? And what are the operational risks? And any one of those could be the most important or more important or a combination of that for a particular situation. So as an example, so at Robinhood, there was a significant deposit fraud problem. But in order to manage the problem, we would necessarily upset a number of good customers who were generating a lot of revenue, who were expecting to get a certain amount of credit, you know, immediate deposit and immediately be able to trade it in order to do all their day trading activities and whatever, you know, higher risk or medium risk kind of instruments that they wanted to trade. There is a there was a very, very strong business kind of reasons for why we wanted to minimize impact on the revenue for that particular product. At the same time, there was a tremendous amount of operational risk, regulatory risk pressure for how we actually were known in the market for managing fraud. Who you're talking to, whether you're even talking to the C-suite or not, depending on what kind of organization is key, but you're gonna have, you need to know those, all four of those numbers and understand how to build a business case for the specific problem that you're trying to solve.
I think it's a good point to point out, right? We need to recognize that most of what we do can introduce friction, can have that detrimental impact, but when you acknowledge it, you can also start looking for solutions that will contribute on the other side for your low-risk customers, like you were saying, like the people that we do want to transact on our platforms, that we do want to bring, you know, in our funnel and acquire on our platform. Sometimes it can be an emotional discussion, right? Sometimes like numbers can only go so far. When a CEO sees something in the news, they might decide that all of a sudden it's important to start acting on fraud. I've seen it on my side, right? Like during COVID, all of a sudden it was important to invest in protecting remote interactions because everybody was remote. So both of you have about 20 years experience in the business. You've built business cases for a long time to justify your team's existence and acquire more tech. Are there things in the minds of CEOs or executives or senior leadership that have shifted in what they perceive as important when it comes to fraud, right? Maybe moving from protecting the bottom line to having maybe more of a social responsibility, the corporate social responsibility approach. Have you seen what matters change for senior leadership?
Yeah, I'll take it first, Cyril. My experience most recently is that the change that I've seen is that fraud issues and fraud concerns and how you approach fraud as part of your business has shifted from something that you report in metrics and KPIs to the board to having real substantive conversations with the impact on the business to the board. So I absolutely have seen that shift. I would say to anybody in our space, if the CEO says, now I want to invest, do it. That's an operational problem. The challenge often is they're very aware, to your point, it's not just introducing friction. I think more and more CEOs are becoming aware that it's the difference between having a business or not. It's very embarrassing when you try to release something that you think is going to be a big revenue, a lot of revenue growth, and you've told your investors that, and 2 weeks afterwards you have to pull it out of market and then adjust all of your quarterly earnings, revenue targets because it got absolutely clobbered because you didn't do a great job of planning for what the fraudsters were going to do and how you're going to mitigate that. So I've seen that shift personally, and I think it's only going to continue given everything we've heard over the course of the last 2 days in this room and all of us knowing how big the problem is and how impactful on the every single aspect of the customer life cycle of the business.
What about you, Cheryl?
Yes, similarly to Lenny, there'll always be a shift, so expect for it. Stay close to it is kind of my recommendation. And the way to stay close to it is talk to your legal teams, talk to your compliance teams. They kind of have a finger on the pulse. Obviously, your product teams also have a finger on the pulse. Get really close to the user journeys as well. That'll give an indication of what matters and, you know, what are some choices being made in kind of what's being put out into the market. So stay on top of it. And then it comes back to, like, aligning to those priorities. So if meeting regulatory and compliance, getting proactively managing for regulatory and compliance is, like, the need of the moment, then go in addressing that topic at hand, and then use that as the main lever, and then kind of take the other levers kind of as secondary components to it.
And Simon, if you don't mind, I'm just going to add on to the brilliant point in terms of keeping your partners, like legal and compliance, close, and add to that your finance partners. Because when it comes to what does the business really care about, oftentimes finance will really have their fingers on the pulse. Having those parts of any organization, whether financial services or anything else, as close partners, I found to be critical. Really making them part of your business. People are naturally very fascinated with crime and cops and robbers and all the things that we all fell head over heels into this whole domain in. And they're curious, they're interested, they want to be partners. And so you will never know all the different parts of the business case or all of the different metrics that a particular business or product line cares about. So all of those partners are key, and I'd say finance is into that, and technology. Because we're coming back to what we're trying to invest in here. Oftentimes, let's say the CEO said, go invest, I care about this problem. Well, who's gonna really build it and solve it and figure it out? It's the technology teams.
And the IT team never stops you, right? They never slow you down when you wanna do that. They always collaborate and they want to do what you want, right?
I hear a question in that.
The irony here. I wanna take some of the questions that are coming from the audience. I'll take the first one because it's upvoted. And actually, I will not take the question as it is. I want to get you on that first statement. Knowing the fraud rate is straightforward, I would challenge that statement. Do you think that the fraud rate is a straightforward thing for organizations? Do organizations know what their fraud rate is, and do they have across different organizations or even within the same organization the same understanding of what fraud means?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I think I made this point: know your user journeys well and how you're measuring that. So, for example, I've seen a situation where we would see declines for insufficient funds, right? So, think of buy now, pay later. Your first transaction goes through; your second failed for insufficient funds. Is that because of insufficient funds, or is that because of fraud? And so what will happen is it depends on how you're measuring it. So insufficient funds will be a regular decline rate. It won't be a fraud decline rate, right? It's not coded as fraud decline rate. And so are you factoring that? How are you connecting the data? How are you able to tell that that is a truly insufficient funds, or is there fraud masked in it? So when it comes to do you really know your fraud rate, you got to look at all the different places where there are losses and look at what components can tie into fraud, and that'll be the fraud rate. The other way also is looking at total cost of fraud is kind of what I would say is another metric in that same part. But just to answer the question is, how do you quantify conversion, user experience, and reputation? The two things I think, just quickly to give you kind of some things that at least I've come across. For conversion is simply, I look at it from approval rates, like how are you going to drive more approvals and look at that and ensuring that once it kind of passes through the fraud funnel, has it been approved, is like an easy metric to zoom in on. And user experience and reputation, definitely look at your customer complaints. It's a really good indicator of like where things are trending. Mm-hmm. And look at how, when you introduce new solutions, is that driving down, and how do you directly correlate it?
What about you, Lenny? How do you put numbers on things such as your reputation?
Well, the question, it's not easy. But you have to. So you have to figure out what the numbers are. And it's a project. It's an exercise. And sometimes you need to do it once and invest a lot with your, let's say, your your onboarding product or kind of business, or your payments kind of product folks or a business. And you really have to invest in and define what those shared metrics are, and then actually invest and define the underlying data analytics, lowercase a, for how you're going to actually get those metrics and know them and all look at them at the same time. It's a difficult question. Some simple things in terms of how. So for reputation, well, how many complaints are coming in from law enforcement and from regulatory bodies? Your user experience, Cheryl said, your complaints. You can go further. Because oftentimes you have to partner with that product team to actually map out the user journey and map out which part. Because oftentimes you don't know exactly what the controls are. You really have to go to that painstaking detail and understand, and then kind of come up with metrics that the highest level folks in the organization are going to understand at a moment's notice and at a glance, and your actual kind of on the ground practitioners. You must.
Before we wrap this up, I'll finish with my own personal favorite, but reputational risk. You can see what happens to a company's stock value right after a big data breach event covered in the media. When you lose valuation in the billions, this is the cost of your reputation, and that speaks to CEOs for sure. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your expertise with us today. Obviously, we couldn't cover everything, but we'll be around, so if you want to come and talk to us, get the answer in person, we'll be more than happy to talk to you.
If there's an opportunity for us to do an offline answer, we can also send it through PJ.
Oh, absolutely, PJ. You should send us the questions.
You got it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.